The following podcast contains explicit language.
What's good, everyone? You're listening to the Post Bougie Podcast for the week of May 27th. This is GD, Gene Demby, senior editor at Huffington Post Black Voices and the founder of Post Bougie, here as always with my play cousins, Nicole and Joel. We have a very special guest with us today, Ta-Nehisi Coates, the esteemed blogger slash author slash senior editor at The Atlantic slash occasional contributor to The New Yorker. I gotta ask you about that at some point. We asked Ta-Nehisi on to be on this edition of the podcast because three of us, Nicole, Joel, and I, have had a million conversations about football, and we've talked a lot of shit about football. I'm an Eagles fan. Joel is an erstwhile Oilers fan slash Titans fan. Nicole is a horrible person. She's a Cowboys fan. Up until recently, Ta-Nehisi was among that cohort as well. A widely circulated blog entry on his blog at The Atlantic about kind of the last straw for his football fandom after Junior Seau apparently committed suicide a few weeks ago. Ta-Nehisi wrote, "I now know that I have to go. I've known it for a while now, but I've yet to walk away. For me, the hardest portion is living apart, destroying something that binds me to friends and family. With people whom I would not pass another word, I can debate the greatest running back of all time. It's like losing a language." So this has obviously been a process for you, Ta-Nehisi. So could you kind of walk us through the beginning of your football apostasy?
All right, y'all. So in my infinite wisdom, I managed to not record the beginning of Ta-Nehisi's response here. So I'm going to jump ahead a minute or so. But here's what you missed. Ta-Nehisi was discussing the sad case of Chris Henry, a talented but troubled player for the Cincinnati Bengals. Henry had become increasingly erratic and he died in 2009 after falling off the back of a pickup truck that was being driven by his fiance during a domestic dispute. An autopsy showed that Henry was suffering from chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, which is the brain disease linked to head injuries that causes depression and dementia, and that's been linked to a lot of football players. All right, all caught up. Excuse my idiocy again.
They had gotten so much shit over the years, yeah, for being a horrible teammate, being selfish, being crazy, doing this and doing that. And now to find that this dude was sick on the most intimate, you know, possible level, you know, where you could be sick and never even knew it. You know, as somebody else said, this woman said about her husband, who, you know, she found out he had CTE. You know, he never had a chance. Chris Henry never really had a chance, you know. So it was that, and then finally the Junior Seau piece. And, you know, what a lot of folks like to say is, well, you know, you don't know that this is what, that it was CTE. Well, you know, I don't know that it was CTE, but I don't like even thinking about it. You know what I mean? And so, you know, on one level, like, I'm not one of these people who believes that you know, really should outlaw football. I don't believe you should outlaw boxing. You know, I think grown people, you know, who want to go do what grown people want to do should be able to do that. That does not absolve me of my ethical question of whether I should participate and support that. You know, whether, you know, I think drugs, you know, should be legal or not, you know, is a separate question from whether I'm going to sit around and watch a drug addicted person destroy their life. Right. Those are two different questions.
Right. Nicole, you said that you were actually driving around with your mom when you found out that Seau had died, and
so I feel like it's a little weird to say this, but I feel like it's also one of those moments that I'm not going to forget because, I mean, you guys know this because you know me. I grew up watching football. Like, it's just, it's very sort of central to the way that I grew up and kind of to me as a person, as weird as that sounds to say. And I remember I was at the beach on vacation, had made a concerted effort to sort of unplug, but I would listen to NPR when I got in the car and we had to go to the grocery store or whatever in the morning. And I got in the car with my mom, we turned the car on, and like the first thing we heard out of the radio was that Junior Seau was dead. And the both of us were just like, wait, what just happened? It stayed with me in a way that a lot of that other stuff didn't. Like, I guess you're right. It is sort of the accumulation, but that moment right there is when I thought to myself, like, all right, now maybe it is feasible for me to not watch football again. Like, I don't know if I can keep doing this.
Because I find Ta-Nehisi's choice to be, this is going to sound, this is maybe the wrong word, but it seems incredibly brave to me. I mean, because I...
Oh, absolutely. I want to be able to do it, but I honestly don't know if I can.
Hold up. You got to, let's be really clear here. One of the things that happened that I neglected to mention is, there's this famous run, which I always loved, where Earl Campbell God, who did he hit? His name is Isaiah something or other. He was like a
he's for the Rams, right?
Yeah, 4 or 5 time. Yes, exactly. Pro bowler for the Rams, and he lowered his head and put his helmet into this kid in like the 70s, and he changed that dude's life. And, you know, like, for the worse, right?
Right.
And, you know, football, you know, is tied up to, you know, at least for me, also to other cultural markers. So, you know, you come up in certain environments that I'm sure you guys can relate to. And that sort of power, that sort of strength is something that you relate to as something that you, you know, you want to have in your life. You know, you want to, it said something. It was the kind of art. It was like a reflection, a metaphor for how, you know, we wanted to be in the world. And so much of football is like that. And then you find out what's behind it, right? And so those big hits don't, it just doesn't feel the same anymore. So this isn't even an effort. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm craving red meat, but I've made some sort of ethical decision to be a vegetarian. It's more like I have lost the taste for it. Like, I don't, like, it really actually disturbs me to sit through and watch a game now. I can't watch. So it's not, I don't know. Brave would, like, I think, imply some sort of, like, withholding.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is one of the reasons why I don't really want to put that on other people, because, like, it's actually it is not pleasurable to me anymore to know that.
Wow.
It just leaves me with too many questions.
Okay.
It's not I don't know. And I guess, like, this is why I was sort of even uncomfortable about saying it, because it becomes this thing of, you know, are you telling other people they should do that? Are you, you know, trying to affect some sort of, no, I just don't enjoy it. Right. I just don't enjoy it. It's really that simple, you know?
I'm gonna disagree with you. I think it is brave, because, like, I watch the games now and I flinch. Like, I used to cheer and be like, oh man, that was a great hit. And now I flinch, right? And I'm like, oh, what's that gonna be like for him later on? And I haven't quite made it. And I am, in a way, I'm ashamed to say this, because it makes me feel like I get where you're coming from, and I get that I am watching people essentially, for some of them, ruin their lives for my personal entertainment, and I feel awful about that. But because I've grown up with it, and because it's so central to me, like, I just haven't been able to make that leap to where I'm like, I can't do this anymore, either because I feel so strongly that I can't, that I won't, or that I've lost the enjoyment factor. I still haven't lost the enjoyment factor, and in a way I wish that I had, because it would make the decision so much easier.
Well, Joel, you played football in college, and you actually talked about getting dinged in high school and having a concussion, and playing through a game, right? You played through the rest of the game with a concussion, or do you remember?
Yeah.
Has any of, you know, the Seau stuff, and then, you know, Andre Waters and Dave Dorson, has any of that kind of, do you ever get nervous for yourself, what your future may look like?
Well, there's a couple things to it. One, it's really interesting that Ta-Nehisi brought up Earl Campbell, because, you know, you mentioned that I grew up an Oilers fan, right? And so I grew up, the first football star that I knew was Earl Campbell. Everybody that was an Oilers fan wanted to be Earl Campbell. My father also played running back in college. So, like, if there was anybody that I wanted to be, like, at 6 or 7 years old, it was Earl Campbell, right? Well, you grow up, the thing about Houston is a huge city. It's the fourth largest in the country, obviously, but it's very small. And so you have the occasion to, you know, see some of these guys. And so I kind of saw the deterioration of Earl Campbell, like, very early. Like, I don't know anybody who's seen Earl Campbell.
Yeah.
He's very diminished, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even know if I should say that. I mean, I guess I will. I'll go
ahead. There's a great Real Sports on him where they talk about this. Where you actually can see, he did an interview, I think it's about 4 or 5 years ago, where they you see the actual, he's diminished. He definitely is. He's been on camera like this.
Yeah, he has, like, a drop foot. I mean, he has, like, all these injuries. And it was weird because I saw him at an event in 2000, and one of my buddies was a sports writer in Texas, and he said he saw him at that occasion, and he was like, it reminded me that I needed to update his obituary.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That's how bad he is, right? So I knew, it's not like a lot of what people are seeing now, like things that I kind of came to grips with early. Like, I knew, you know, what people said then is that, well, you know, people, you know, Bum Phillips just ran Earl Campbell into the ground and they beat him up, and that's kind of what it was. But I also knew other guys who had played football, and you see other professional athletes around town, and you know they're walking with like that limp, right? That like, you know, the octogenarian's limp, but like in their 40s and 50s.
Right, right.
And so I kind of, it's really tough to sort of like, I mean, obviously you don't think about that as a teenager when you're playing football, especially when you're growing up in the South, and like that's what you do. Like, you know, I assume for some people, you know, their culture is, you know, I don't know what it's like in the North or the West, but like part of growing up in the South is like you're going to play football, right?
Right.
And so, you know, you do this, and it's just kind of part of the game that like you deal with, you know, getting dinged and getting hurt. And I knew that it was bad, but you didn't get a sense for how bad it really was. But then, you know, hearing about Junior Seau now, you're taking it to that. And then it's like, well, it didn't really shake me. And I mean, maybe that's kind of the scary thing to this is like, it didn't affect me in the way that it seemed to affect everybody else. Because like, this is not news to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I knew that like the toll that the game takes on people dating back to my first childhood hero is that this game is really bad and it destroys people. But the thing about it, though, that I've always kind of come to grips with here is that football is like my childhood friend, man. Yeah. And it'd be like me giving up my friend. Like, I don't know how I could just walk away from the game. And I'm not, you know, I like what Ta-Nehisi's doing and what Nicole was talking about. You know, I mean, I could certainly see, you know, why that might be, you know, something that you all would consider. But I just can't, I can't fathom, you know, walking away from the game. And maybe, you know,
here's the thing. I think let's complicate this even more. Let's go back to Earl Campbell. Earl Campbell was what? He was one of, I think, like 10 or 12 kids, was raised sharecropping or something like that. He, you know, was able to get his mother a new house. He talked about this on Real Sports. You know, he was able to, you know, take care of his, you know, he wasn't one of these dudes who like, you know, some of these other cats end up broke. I know it doesn't, you know, for other people it goes differently. What I'm saying is he had whatever happened to his body, I think he would say, you know, he would have a substantially better life than anything he thought he was going to have
right
without football. So, like, that's the other side of it. You know, right. I'm always really leery of saying, you know, well, this shouldn't exist. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily wrong to say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, live like this for my youth. I understand I'm going to have problems for the rest of my life, but this is what I want. I don't know that that's wrong if you're honest and straight up and say that.
And I think you ask, you know, people that compete at that level, because I think there used to be a famous survey dealing with Olympic athletes saying, you know, if they could win a gold medal or lose 5 years off of their life, like, would they be willing to make that trade? And something like 3/4 of the people surveyed said they'd be willing to trade those 5 years for a gold medal. And so I sort of think of like football players as like that. Like, you don't hear very often guys say, well, I wouldn't do that over again, right? And so that's sort of like informs my, you know, sort of my takeaway from all of this is that, you know, the element of it is choice. Like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's analogy to football being human cockfighting,
it
applies more to college football than professional football. Because professional football, you're getting compensated,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, you're being fairly compensated for the damage you're doing to your body.
Mm-hmm. Right, I think, and that was the thing, Joel, you were like a big proselytizer for Friday Night Lights, which is a fantastic book about football, but about race and class and a bunch of other things. But that was one of the things I think that was so jarring to me about the book was that these kids are, I mean, we're talking about high school kids, we're talking about kids who were 16, 17, they were already kind of experiencing the kind of injuries that were going to be debilitating, you know, like they weren't...
Right, who, let's note, whose bodies haven't actually, like...
Right.
Grown into their adult forms yet. Like, they're still developing and sustaining those.
Right, injuries. Absolutely. And it was one of those things, like, you know, Daniel Engler wrote this piece in Slate, and he was kind of saying that what he thought was interesting about the concussion conversation, the conversation around CTE and head injuries, which is so fascinating about that, is that people are really paying a lot of attention to it, but it's not as if football wasn't kind of ruining people before we started having this conversation about concussions, right? I mean,
Gene, I think the difference, though, is this. Like, people act like, like the stance of the NFL, and you know, not even like the corporate NFL, but NFL players is to me often rings as dishonest.
What do you mean?
If they, well, I mean, what? For 10 years, the NFL repressed any sort of research on CTE, put out bad research on CTE, and acted like it was good research. Recently, Kurt Warner says he doesn't want his son playing, and everybody in the world jumped on him. And the other thing about Junior Seau that got me, you know, with Chris Berman going on TV saying, oh, we can't, what did he say? Well, we can't know, you know, what happened. We'll never know whether it was, no, we can't know. We might not know. I don't know what the family decided to do with Junior Seau's brain, but no, we can know. You know, so, I mean, like, I always felt like I compare it with boxing, right? Like, punch drunk is a thing. People knew that. You get punched in your head, it wasn't going to be good for you over the long. Nobody really disputed that.
Right.
Because this is actually sort of what I think, getting back to Engberg's Slate column, is, and maybe this is why I'm just a little bit more chintzy about saying that, you know, brain injury thus suicide for Junior Seau is that, you know, sometimes we need to come to the grips with the fact that people also commit suicide. There were a lot of other factors in Junior Seau's life that might, you know, that might made him a risk for suicide. I mean, he had had a divorce. He was having financial problems. We all know, we hear about guys and talk about the difficulty in, like, finding something meaningful after they leave the game. And so that's why I was always like, well, you know, sometimes people just commit suicide, too. Like, Junior Seau, you know, lived his life, you know, and publicly with the smile on his face.
Do you think that's part of it? Like, he's always sort of been seen as, like, a good, like, somebody who did everything right and who, like, wasn't getting into too much trouble and, like, sort of like, oh, well, he had a career after football and he seemed to be doing okay. And then all of a sudden, like, that's sort of the public perception of him versus someone like a Chris Henry who was sort of always a screw up.
Right. But isn't that what we say about a lot of people that commit suicide, though, right? Like, I mean, see what I'm saying? Like, though, what we said about Junior Seau could be said about a lot of people who commit suicide.
Yeah,
you know, that we never saw it coming. Like, you know, he was such a happy-go-lucky guy. He had a lot going for himself. Why would he do this to himself? And I, you know, I'm, but for the fact that he may have sustained up to, you know, 1,500 undiagnosed concussions and thousands more subconcussive hits.
I mean, you got
to
think about
it. Like, for me, even if it came out that he had no presence of CTE at all, it still would be jarring to me because I don't even, like, if I have to have this conversation every time it happens.
Right.
And Jesus, I feel so bad because I'm forgetting the cat from the Falcons.
Who, Ray Easterling, right?
Yeah, who we're pretty sure had CTE. I mean, he was, you know, in the suit. He, you know, was registering symptoms. I mean, we'll get confirmation on that eventually. But, you know, he definitely had the symptoms and thought that he, you know, that was what was going on him. Like, I can't, like, have that going back and forth in my head, you know? I don't want to function like that. I don't want to even have to think about it, you know, because again, you know, for me, it's just, well, what role am I playing in this, you know, and just the entire sort of, you know, not to get back to this again, but the denialist, you know, element of the NFL over, I feel like I would respect it again a lot more if they just said, you know what, this might not be good for you in the long run. You know, you're going to take a lot of hits. You know, you almost certainly, you know, will take, have some brain injury, and it might not be good for you in the long run. Them's the rules. I think I have a lot more respect for that. I mean, if you said to me, you know what, Ta-Nehisi, you're going to die at 50, but you can win a Nobel Prize. You might make a deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a crazy deal. You know, longevity ain't for everybody. I might very well make that deal. You know? So I don't, you know, it's just this sort of, but we can't bring ourselves to do that. You know what I mean? Right, we can't quite, you know, get to that point where we say that. And I don't know. I have so much respect for the game that I would totally understand it. I think it's a beautiful game. You know, so if you willingly said, you know, hey, I'm sacrificing longevity for this, I would understand that. I could relate to that.
Right. Well, I think what's sort of interesting in that, you know, sort of the denialist, and there's two people that come to mind. One is Ricky Williams, we can come back to in a second, but when you said Merrill Hodge, I don't know if people remember how Merrill Hodge first came to, like, the national spotlight, and it's not just because...
Wasn't he talking about his own injuries? Like, wasn't that part of it, that he was talking... Like, wasn't he, like, someone who had kind of been battered, or wasn't... I mean, am I
mistaken? He had substantial concussion issues.
I think that's what ran him out the league, wasn't it?
Yeah, he retired because of brain injury.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, that's what I don't understand. Like, I mean, a guy like Merrill Hodge, I feel like sort of owes it I mean, if you really care about the game, like I guess he would probably refer to himself as like a keeper of the game, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. one of the standard bearers for the NFL. Well, if you really care about the game and you really care about the welfare of the people that come behind you, then be honest about what these kids are going to face. Right. And I mean, look, I mean, like sort of like Ta-Nehisi. I could never tell Ta-Nehisi, well, you know what, you know, you're wrong for not watching football, right? Right. Like, I mean, that's stupid because he gets to decide what's right for him. So for like them to go with like Kurt Warner for simply saying, well, I don't think I want my son to play football. Like, I mean, it's just sort of, it's like hypocritical to me. And I don't understand.
So let me push you on this though. One thing that that I've been thinking about is this. What relationship is there between Pop Warner and I would say up through high school to the pros? I mean, is the fear that if big time football stars start saying, and you know, Kurt Warner isn't the first. I think Troy Aikman said the same thing. Tom Brady's dad said the same thing. I guess it was today. Is the notion that sort of thing becomes a threat to Pop Warner, which over the long term becomes a threat to the game, to the program?
Isn't that wasn't there a piece on Grantland that sort of yes. depicted the downfall of the NFL occurring in exactly this way, where people are like, they start out at the lower levels and say, you know what, this is too dangerous, I'm not letting my kid do it anymore, and eventually the league starved of talent. Mm-hmm.
But isn't it doesn't seem like you need to start playing football, you know, when you're 8, 9, 10 years old either. I mean, you know, like, I mean, not that Antonio Gates is the rule, but there are plenty of people who started playing pretty late in their athletic careers, you know what I mean? Right. Like, and managed to have, I mean,
is Brady. There a way Brady started, his dad was saying it. Brady started when he was 14.
Right, exactly. So, and Antonio Gates, I don't think, played any football until he tried out for the NFL Combine after he washed out as an NBA, like, prospect or whatever. So I think, I mean, that's obviously, he's an outlier, but, like, is there an argument to be made that you could even do away with, like, the physicality of football and, like, the Pop Warner level and the high school level and then introduce kind of that physicality in college? I don't know if that's any better. I don't know.
No, I definitely think that, but I think the one thing that's sort of the flaw, and I have to admit, I've been trying to catch up on a lot of this reading, and I didn't get all the way through that particular Grantland piece, but what I would say the flaw in that is that you got to think about the guys who play football and the families that send their kids to play football. Like, I think that conversation is kind of had in a vacuum with people who for whom, like, football is not as integral a part of, like, the early childhood socialization, right? So, like, you think about, like, in the South, like, in Mississippi, like, you know, there are a lot of people, or in Louisiana, like, there are a lot of people who, like, legitimately look at football as a way of, like, getting a college education. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I do think that football could be a little bit, it could certainly become less popular. Like, I don't deny that at all. But in terms of, like, you know, like, football going away, I don't see that happening, because, I mean, people still box, but it's just like poor people.
Right.
Poor people and people, you know, people that would have done that, you know, in the 40s and 50s, they do other things.
Yeah, they play football now, right? I mean, all those guys are.
Yeah, a lot of them do play football. The heavyweights, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Muhammad Ali, you look at him, you're like, this dude would be a crazy free safety, like, now, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, he was just that, but he would never be a boxer now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. I mean, think of, you know, Julius Peppers, you know, was like, well, shit, I'd like to be the heavyweight champion of the world. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, think about what you could do with that. But I mean, you know, football is a more accessible, and, you know, I mean, it's, you don't think of yourself as getting hit in the head in football in the way you do in boxing, for whatever reason.
But doesn't that push the argument then you're talking about, if you're not talking about the end of football, you are certainly talking about a diminished National Football League, right?
A more regionalized, yeah, I think.
I mean, you're not talking about the number one game in the country. I mean, you're not talking about an entertainment juggernaut like you have right now, right? If that's the case,
it could still be number one, but it could not be a juggernaut, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it could still be, like, tremendously popular, but, like, not as popular. Like, I mean, I can't envision 50 years out, like, what sport would overtake it. Maybe soccer. I don't know, but
curling. Curling's making a renaissance.
Right.
I don't want to live in that future.
Something else to consider too that I often think about, like, what if football exists for a reason? We're animals, you know, like, violence is a, I'm a big, you know, a proponent, isn't it? Violence is a part of who we are, you know, and I don't know that we can ever excise. What if these sort of violent sports serve some sort of societal, social function? I mean, what if there's no, you know, what if it, hey, this is like the best we can do of a bad situation, you know, a sort of outlet for our violence. Because, you know, again, like, I think about how, like, one of the things I was trying to write about in that piece, you know, in terms of, like, losing a language is, this is, like, about my growing distress. We can call it, like, slowly moving out of the hood, which is a very distressing process.
Right.
For me, you know, I realized today it's been almost 2 years since somebody said to me, yo, yo, big man. Like, that doesn't, it don't really happen. I'm really upset about that now. You know, like, those sort of experiences are just going away.
Right, right.
And football was part of that.
Right, right.
You know, football tied you to a group of people you could always have. When I lived in Harlem, I used to have a dude at the grocery store, and every time I went in there, it would either be football or basketball. You know, we didn't know each other from Adam. But that was, like, the language. And so to cut yourself out of that, man, I mean, I think is difficult. You know, it's really, it's probably the hardest aspect as far as I'm concerned, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's a really important point, because I think, like, I mean, I think about, like, my father. Like some of the most vivid memories I have of us together are, like, watching, like, the first time we watched Vincent Young play football in high school. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
We saw Vince, like, I mean, that's like a moment that I'll remember forever. Like, my dad driving me home from games. Like, yeah. I mean, it really, like, it has bonded us together in a way that I can't think of anything. I mean, other than, like, being, you know, him being my father, right? Other than that, bonding. But the thing is, football is not easy for me to give up. But, like, this is kind of what I was thinking about earlier. It's like, there are a lot of things that I'm uncomfortable with and, like, how they're done and the things that I enjoy. Like, mm-hmm. how they're produced, like, for instance, like Nikes. Like, I like Nike, right?
Right.
You know, I like meat. I like eating meat. I like, I used to shop at Walmart a lot,
right?
When there was one closer. And I don't like what those companies do. I don't, you know, I don't like, or I don't like some of the business practices they engage in. So some of these things are easier for me to get rid of than, say, football. So I figure for, like, Ta-Nehisi and Unicole, and I don't know, Gene, you haven't even, you know, said so much about what your kind of thoughts are about this, but, like, for me, football is much easier, is much harder to give up than, say, like, wearing Nikes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because that football has been, like, kind of integral to my relationship with my mom, of all people. Like, my entire family is mostly women, but my entire family are Eagles fans. Like, that's how I became an Eagles fan. And my mom would be like, that's Seth Joyner. My mom was like, that's Seth Joyner. He's a linebacker. What's a linebacker do, Mom? You know what I mean? She would walk me through. That's Jerome Brown. He's a defensive tackle. What's a defensive tackle? And so, like, if we don't speak all week, me and my mom will text during the Eagles game. Like, I may not get up with my mom all week, but we will definitely talk during the Eagles game. That's, like, when we talk at, you know, that's when we have our longest conversations, probably. It's funny, because I feel like you said, it was easy for me to give up meat. Football is, like,
right.
Football is probably, like, the least, if all sports is kind of, like, a approximation of war, the most, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's, like, no. If you watch an NFL promo, it's, like, the most martial. It's, like, I mean, you hear the drums and the, you know what I mean? There's, like, planes flying over the stadiums. I mean, it's not even like they're pretending. Mm-hmm. If sometimes for like a Marine's ad, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I think, you know, on the website SB Nation, a guy wrote a post similar to that. That, you know, they talk about a lot of times when people go overseas to visit the troops, and they say that, you know, the people that they quote get the most instinctively are football players, because they feel they have something in common with them. You know, I guess because of the regiment, you know, the teamwork, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, that, you know, all those things that make us love, you know, football are some of the same things that we love about our military, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's weird, because I think I'm going on a limb here. I think we'd all be kind of, we're all at least wary of, like, the application of military force, right? But, like, I mean, to go to Ta-Nehisi's point from earlier, is football, like, a way to kind of, is it like a surrogate for all these other societal urges we have to, like, I mean, not that, I don't know if you could argue that America doesn't really suppress those urges too much. But is it a surrogate, kind of another avenue to suppress these urges to, like, fuck shit up? I don't know.
Yeah, I think about, like, what you were just saying. LeVar Arrington recorded this thing where he was sort of talking about this. He comes from this from a totally different angle. But he was talking about, just in his experiences, how football has bridged the gap across ethnicity. And, I can remember, God, this must have been about 4 or 5 years ago. It was an ESPN Sunday night game. And Yeah, because I guess this is before they switched to NBC. Anyway, you know, they were doing the introductions, and the Ravens were playing the Colts, and Ray Lewis comes out, you know, and he does his dance.
He does his whole, like, war chant. Like,
yes, yeah. But on the side are these two white dudes from the military with the American flag, and they, like, leaping up and down, and they're so happy. And, you know, it's like, wow, you know, these two white dudes from Oklahoma or wherever they're from. And Ray Lewis is doing this thing that people associate with this sort of street thug, you know, sort of be, but they get it.
Right, right, right.
They get it, and they handed him the American flag, and Ray Lewis is waving the American flag. And it was, like, five different, you know, sort of, you know, diets all in one. Converging, you know, right. And football sort of makes that possible. I can't really think of too many things like that. I was listening to Joel talk about him and his dad. You know, I can remember, like, when Doug Williams played in the suit, my dad, you know, from Philadelphia, big Eagles fan, you know, but seeing, you know, that first black quarterback and, you know, seeing him get injured, and my dad talking about Jay Schrader came in, my dad saying, Doug ain't going to let the white boy carry, he ain't going to let the white boy carry. You know, and Doug Williams coming back in and lighting John Elway up, and that was like, my dad went through the roof.
Right.
You
right.
know, or sitting with my own son watching that Vince Young come back from a few years ago. What do you the ball like that, the 1 yard line, or something crazy like that. Yeah. You know, watching that with your kid, that is priceless. I mean, so it's like, okay, so what do we replace that with?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so, like, yeah, what would you do with your son? I mean, if you know, I don't know how much of a fan he is of the game already.
Well, he's going to keep watching. He already said that. So, you know, and I wouldn't stop him. You know, like, I just wouldn't. That it strikes me as wrong to do that. I just, because I think, you know, you made a good point earlier, you know, about Mead, Walmart, et cetera. Look, man, I just bought a MacBook Air, right? You know, we really want to go in, you know, Mike Daisy aside, or, you know, how, you know, Apple makes its products. I mean, at any moment, you know, there are a number of things you can just go through my house and talk about my carbon footprint, you know, whatever I am doing wrong. Yeah, I don't know where football ranks on the list of sort of, you know, sinful things. It's just the one thing I can't take anymore. Like, individual, you know what I mean? Like, we all have to decide where we're going to fight those battles. So, you know, I leave that to him, man. I don't know. You know, like, that's not the only thing. The good news is that's not the only thing we ever related on. You know, it was never like that. And it was never like that between me and my dad. Right. Although that was a specific, powerful thing that I really, really am sad to see go. He also liked Derrick Rose. So, I mean, you know, he gets excited when Derrick Rose, you know, we get a Bulls comeback or something.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Well, yeah. I want to go back to something that we touched on earlier about the difference between college football and professional football, and this is arguably a whole nother podcast, but I think that there's a, I would almost argue that you should watch professional football before you should watch college football, because the players aren't being compensated and arguably don't know all of the risks.
Right.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because, you know, one of the things that, like, you know, I always tell people is, like, I don't care about, like, consistency. Like, consistency is nothing that I care about. Like, I care about being as right as possible.
Right.
But I fail here when it comes to college football, because I love college football a lot more than I love the NFL.
Really?
And I love the NFL. Like, I mean, I got the Red Zone channel last year, and, I mean, just, you know, Sundays were just a mess for me in here. Like, I didn't do anything. And this is kind of what makes football a hypocrite even of me, because, like, I know that college football is like a farce, right? Like, that, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I mean, the only thing that makes it different from professional football is we don't call the people that run college football programs owners. And Nicole's right. Like, you talk about, like, a lot of the players, they don't understand the risks that are involved in the game, you know, as intrinsically as, like, the professional football players do, because they're not, you know, they haven't got to that point yet. The players that are good enough in college football to play pro, they're still sort of like men among boys, right? But if there was one thing that I wish I could give up, it would be college football, because for all those reasons that, like, you know, the people don't get compensated in a fair way.
There's actually there's even more of a disincentive for coaches to kind of pump the brakes on, you know, like, if a player is, I mean, these people they have a vested interest in, you know, that running back, you know, who is your stud, you know, because the talent disparity can be much more pronouncing on the college football level. It's like, you have a a really good running back, you know what I mean? He might have had, you know, 25 carries in the game. Like, right. What's another 5, 10 carries, you know? Even though that's crazy, this kid is 19, 20 years old, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
And he's not going to want to get out the game, you know? Like, he's not going to, you know? I mean...
Absolutely. And that's the thing. Like, we don't, like, go through the same thing in the NFL with, like, pretending that coaches are teachers. Like,
right.
You know,
right.
These guys that are, like, mercenaries, right? Like, Bill Belichick is a guy that, like, most people understand that, like, he'll cut you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if it's in the name of winning. Like, college coaches, you know, like, a guy like Lou Holtz, man. Like, you know, just, I don't even want to get into, like, that guy, but. I mean, you know, the people sell him as like a professor, and they call him Dr. Lou on TV and all of this. And I mean, he's about as cutthroat as anybody there is. And so, yeah, that's sort of the problem to me, man. It's just that we don't, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of getting lost here in my thoughts because I get so angry about it, and I get angry at my hypocrisy with this.
Joel, if you had it to do over again, and let's say you could either have the life you have now or just play 4 solid years of college ball, like no NFL or anything, just 4 solid years of college ball, what do you think you would do?
Oh, I'd play football.
Yeah.
It's not even close. You know,
it's a beautiful game. I would have played football if I could have. Shoot, man. I could keep my grades up. I wish I had, even now. I guess I'm glad I didn't now, but... No, not at all. Some of my best memories of pickup football. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, well, let me ask you all this then. I mean, you have a son now, but, like, would you all let your children play the game?
Well, my son did play.
Okay.
He did. He played when he was 6, 7, and 8 years old. And this is, you know, like, right when this stuff is beginning to come out, you know.
It was tackle ball?
Oh, yeah. Equipment and everything, man. Equipment and everything.
Do they have, so on that level, you know, the Pop Warner level, are there designated positions? Like, is somebody always the QB? Is somebody always
What position was He was a defensive end and an offensive tackle. And he liked it a lot. He really, really did. He's like any other kid. He got interested in other things. You know, I can't sit here and tell you that, you know, there was a... Well, at this point, I probably would have taken him out at this point, but it never came to that because he got interested in other things. And if he was in... You know, he still talks about, like, playing in high school. I can't tell you I would stop him. I can't... You know, we would have a very, very long, informed conversation, but I just... my son wanted to box right now. I can't tell you I would stop him for boxing.
Really?
You know...
Wow, yeah.
If he really wanted to?
Yeah.
I mean, no, I can't tell you I would.
Well, are the risks at that level, are they a lot more reduced? I mean, because when you're talking about, you know, high school and college players, these guys are bigger and they're faster and stronger. Is there, like, a limit to the I mean, I'm just...
I think they don't know, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and point out that I, being the only female on this podcast, thought about it a little bit differently.
Okay.
I don't want to have children, but I'm thinking about, like, what I would do if my daughter wanted to play a sport in general. Like, I played lacrosse growing up. My sister played soccer. Soccer is actually really dangerous for kids, too, because there are lots of headers. Like, they have...
Oh, yeah.
I won't say as many concussion issues as football, but it's also really dangerous for kids, especially for girls, because they tend to play it more than, you know, or they're more involved with it just because football isn't always or usually isn't an option. And I honestly, I don't think I could say now, but I think that, I don't know, because I don't think that I could say no, but I also think that if something were to ever happen to my child, that I would feel responsible and be like, I knew what the consequences were, and I let you do it anyways.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah, see that, but since we can get, like, that becomes really deep, okay, because I started my son catching the bus. You know, he wasn't young for when I started catching the bus.
I started,
you know, I was walking home from school at 7, had my own key, you know, and was on mass transit by the time I was 9. You know, my son, we did a slow process, but we probably started him on this when he was 10, you know, walking to the bus stop, walking back, teaching him about that. I mean, something could happen to him then. You know, I just don't know, like, we get into this thing where, you know, here I am making the other side of the argument. But, look, the minute you decide to have a kid, It's a risk. Everything after that is a risk.
That's an important thing because, and it kind of gets to what we're talking about because I think of like allowing your child to drive, like that's right, like. I felt like that's like horrifying. You know,
what I'm saying? I might would stop him from driving. You know that I might would actually stop him from driving. Right. I might would do that, especially in a city like New York. In fact, in a city like New York, I almost certainly would stop him. There's no need to. Right. So, what are you driving for? That's you don't need to drive at all. You know. So yeah, you know. I mean, think about it like this: cheerleading is extremely dangerous.
Oh yeah. Yep. There's a lot more catastrophic injuries.
I mean, you know, people paralyzed from cheerleading. I mean, what are we supposed to do here? Ballerinas? Ballet is another one, you know, which
destroys you. It absolutely destroys your body.
Yeah.
I mean, so if your daughter says, you know, she wants to be, or your son, you know, says that they want to, you know, dance, they want to do, you say no? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Isn't this sort of what LeVar Arrington was sort of getting at? You think he sort of clarified himself initially?
Yeah. And I thought he was, you know, even though at the end of the day I still disagree with him, I thought that that was a very accurate point. You know, I think that that is true. You know, the minute, you know, the kid, you know, from childbirth or really from conception, it's a risk. Everything's a risk. Everything is a risk, you know, and everything is terrifying. I don't know. We would have a very long, informed conversation. You know, that's what would happen. But I don't like to say that I would absolutely say no, you cannot, you know, do that. I don't think I would approach it like that.
So Joe, I mean, that was your question, but does that
it's weird. I think we'd have a very long conversation, and I'd say, well, hey, look, you know, I enjoy the game. I had a lot of fun with it, and it brought me opportunities that, well, I probably would have had them otherwise. But I mean, I got to have some opportunities that were really cool, regardless. But I'd say, hey, look, by the way, you know, I have a degenerative neck disease, right? Like, I have herniated disc. You know, I suffer from arthritis already. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not quite 34, and I was like, hey, man, you know, did you play? I was a running back.
Yo, truth, just as an aside, because I love telling the story. He was a
yes. I was hoping somebody would mention it.
Oh, wait.
Joe went to TCU as a running back, and he was replaced by this kid who nobody knew. Right?
Oh, like, yeah.
No, you should go for it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I was recruited and I came in the class of 96, and it was me and another running back from Fort Worth, and I was like, wow, they got room to play, man. I could get on TCU and I'll redshirt this next year, and then, you know, I'll be ready to play. But my freshman year, they brought in this kid from Waco named LaDainian Tomlinson.
LaDainian, that's who I thought it was. I thought it was LaDainian.
Yeah.
Did you know like, he was a beast when you saw him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
he was that apparent right away.
He was 195 pounds. The weird thing, he was under-recruited. He didn't have a really big year until his senior year of high school. And so that's how we were able to get him. But he came in at like 195, but like he was benching like 350 pounds as a freshman.
Really?
In college. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you look at him and you're like, wow, like this dude's going to make money playing ball.
Right.
And when you watch. You know, I don't like having, you know, never played, you know, certainly not on that level. I played Pop Warner, but nothing like that. Did you have any sense watching him right then and there? Like, was he faster? Was his cuts quicker? Was he, you know, especially being a running back, like, did you see any difference between you guys?
Yeah, well, you know, that's sort of weird because, like, I always kind of thought that, like, as a kid, like, the way I would look at it, I was like, well, if Barry Sanders can get 5 yards on this run, like, why can't I get 5 yards, right?
right.
I was like, what is so different? Like, I don't understand. Like, what's the difference here? And then you see a guy like LaDainian Tomlinson up close in person, and then you're like, oh, like, that's the difference, right? Like, he just has great feet, like, great balance. Right. He's stronger than everybody. You know, he's faster than everybody. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it became apparent within about, like, 2 weeks of practice.
Y'all, we are hopelessly enamored with football.
I'm jealous that you got to see that up close. I mean, that must have been incredible, dude.
Yeah, man, it was wild, and it was like, you know, after like my third year of football, I was like, dude, like this is not a feature in this for me. Like, I'm
so when you first came in, when you were recruited, did you have like pro dreams? Was that what you were thinking about?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I thought like, man, I'm going to like show everybody. I'm going to, I really like, I had like sort of like pre-written a Heisman speech. I was like, you know, nobody believed
striking the pose in practice.
Yeah. You know, like, I was like, I just didn't get the opportunity, you know what I'm saying? But I'm glad, you know, I proved everybody wrong. Like, you just think, I think everybody that kind of goes to college and plays ball, like, I don't know that everybody thinks they're going to the league, but like, I think everybody thinks they're going to excel when you get there. And then like, you're like, wow, you know, like it's harder than you think. And even still, like to this day, I'm like, man, if I'd gone to like, you know, SMU, maybe I would have been in the league. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. I just wasn't playing in the right system. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I wasn't in the right system. It was politics, man. It was politics, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing that always got me about the pros, man, it's just like, okay, so that's you at the college level. The pros is a league full of the best dude on your team.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a whole nother level. You know, it's like when they were talking that Jeremy Lin thing about you know, I don't mean to call out my own people, man. But my man, Bob Wright, when he was doing that thing about, you know, Asian field vision, I said, look, man, you need to understand. This dude is an athlete. You understand? This dude is an athlete. This dude could probably play football better than you football. He might play baseball better than you. You don't understand. This is like, you know, I know he's Asian. You know what I mean? You think, therefore, he's not. Like, somehow that, you know, fucks up your ability to see. Like, no, he's an athlete. Always remember that. You know, it's not just, yes, he does see things quicker than you. So does Chris Paul.
Right, right.
And his game was so straight. That's what I didn't understand. Like, what are you talking about? His game is so, you know, he ain't like Jeff Hornacek or something, you know?
Right. It's a lot of swaggers, a lot of crossovers, a lot of, you know what I mean? Like,
that shot that he hit against the Raptors, for instance, like, I was like, that's something you'd see on the playground, right?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He just, like, he crossed him over a couple times, squared up, and he shot. You know
what that's Rucker court vision.
Yeah, but that was what was so wild about the LaDainian story is that, like, LaDainian was, you say he was a beast in college, but, like, even people who trained with him in the pros said he was a beast. Like, I remember Reggie Bush was saying that, you know, because Reggie Bush was at SC just down the road when, LaDainian was at San Diego, and he was saying that, like, they would just come. He would come to work out with them in the summertime, and he'd be throwing up every day. Like, he just couldn't keep up. Like,
dude,
wow.
That's the thing. Like, during off season workouts, like, you know, like, we're all in shape, you know, generally, right? Like, right. We're all, like, you know, going through the same things. But like, LaDainian would just get through it like real easy. And I remember, I promise you, my last practice, I just was moving terribly. And in fact, my coach was like, hey, Joel, you're looking like a defensive lineman out here today. And LaDainian, like, because I was doing so poorly, like, the running backs were having to do more drills, and, like, LaDainian got pissed at me. I was like, I don't want to do this shit no more. I was like, I just, whatever it is that, you know, you need to make it, like, I don't have it right now. And
how much of that you think is desire? I mean, I know people always say, like, I was reading up on Robert Smith, Vikings running back who left the game at 28.
To be a doctor, right? He went to medical school, right?
Yeah. And he said he came in that next year and he was just like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. You know?
Yeah. I think that's a lot of it. I think, well, I mean, obviously the talent has to be there, but like, these dudes come in, like, LaDainian came in, and it was like, he was like focused. Like, this is what I'm going to do. Like, I grew up, I'm going to be a professional football player. Like, isn't that, like, even though I wanted to play in the NFL, like, I didn't, like, I knew that there was something else, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, man, I can kind of write for a living. You know what I'm saying? And, like, the thing that kind of occurred to me about, at least certainly among the skill position guys, is, like, everybody had, like, this intense desire to be good at to be the best. And I just didn't have that, but like LaDainian and a couple other guys that I played with did. And I think the part of it is that you have to enjoy practice to an extent, especially college. Like, you have to enjoy the process of getting better, because that's so much of what playing football is. I mean, you know, playing the game is like, you know, 100th or 1,000th of the time the actual game action of what you'll be doing. So.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, that's where you're getting all those hits, right? So, like, that's where I suffered at least two of my concussions is in practice. I mean, because you're, I mean, basically, you're sorting it out right there. Like, who's gonna make it? Who's gonna take it to the next level? You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't want to bore y'all with my Uncle Rico.
It's cool. I'm still a fan, you know, as you can tell. Still a
fan. Yeah, I mean, I think I like recognize the concussion stuff. You know, the last couple of years, I think after the Junior Seau stuff, watching the next slate of 16 games. Or 18. I mean, that's the other thing, right? The league was talking about kind of seriously batting around the idea of...
That's crazy. That's what I mean by hypocrisy, though. That is absolutely... They were doing this as the science with 18 games,
right?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that seems... I mean, that first of all, the football towards the end of the season will be terrible. I mean, just on that level. But, like, you'll be putting people at so much risk for nothing, really. I mean, it's just about money, right? It's just about...
It's a naked money grab.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there's nothing to be gained by... So,
what do you guys think it would take? Is someone going to have to take a hit and just die in the middle of the field? Is that what's going to have to happen?
But I think even though it happened,
right,
it would be...
Right, and that already happened, didn't it?
Has that happened?
Well, that happened back in the day, back in the 20s.
Right. I mean, the reason we have the NCAA was because, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, stepped in and was like... Because people were literally dying out, you know, playing college football. But, like... I mean, it's weird because I think even if someone died on the field in an NFL game, let's say, I feel like there would be a lot of rationalizations around that, too.
But isn't it what we do with auto racing, for instance? Like, people, you know, Bill Earnhardt died in his sport, and, like, it's not like anybody was like, well, you know, maybe we should consider banning auto racing, you know?
Right, they took some, like, they made some kind of decisions on the margins, right, to, like, make it, like, marginally safer, right? Like, there's probably the drivers are a little bit... They probably have different, like, protection and padding and stuff like that. But if you're going 300 miles an hour or 200 some miles an hour...
Right, but there's, like, an inherent recognition that it's a dangerous sport. Like, why there's nobody else in the car with you. That's why you have, like, a team with a suit on. Like, it's dangerous, and nobody makes any bones about that. Like, there are still people, I think, that are arguing that, like, football's not really that bad for you.
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of brings us to... I think, Ta-Nehisi, didn't you post on this, the Ricky Williams' comments?
God, wow.
What did Ricky Williams say?
Oh, that was just depressing.
Yeah, he had an interview on Dan Lebatard's TV show. Hey, they're like buddy-buddy. They go back a ways.
And I love Ricky, by the way. I think Ricky's one of the most interesting cats, you know, to come out of the game. And I even respected him being like, I just want to smoke herb. I actually respect that. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off, Joel.
No. I mean, what he said was that He wasn't sold necessarily on the science linking, you know, brain injuries. I mean, you know, brain injuries to, you know, CTE. And also, I think he said something to the effect that, like, he believed that, like, we should focus more on, like, prevention. Like, he said, you really can't do anything about football. Like, football is just a dangerous sport. But, like, maybe you can. And care for yourself in a way that, like, you can diminish the symptoms or the injuries that you suffer during the game. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, and I think the worst part was when he made the argument that basically flat earthers and creationists make all the time. Well, why should we trust science? Because what science was telling us 10 years ago is proven out not to be true. No, that's how science works. That's why it's science. That's what science is. You know, science isn't, you know, a infallible law of everything. Right. It's about testing, debate, going back and forth. It's a methodology. It's not, you know, written in stone. That's what science is. That's why it's great. You know, which was sort of like, oh, man, that was what really got me. You know what I mean? Yeah, of course. That's how science works. That's what we do. That's the beauty of it. So at that point, I thought he had just totally gone off the deep end.
But do you think that he kind of had, I mean, did players have to rationalize it that way? I mean, because how would
that's
you...
To think, and I'd be interested to hear what Joel thought about it, somebody who played the game, but that it occurred. And he said, didn't he say that, Joel? I don't want to have to think about that.
He did say that. But you know, interesting as Ricky is, I also think he's one of those people that he's one of those people that believes that, like, you can speak something into existence. You know what I'm saying? Like he could speak brain and, like, you know, like, into existence.
Positive energy.
Yeah, you know, and so I just, like, I mean, it's hard to take, I don't want to say not take him serious, but, like, he's just sort of a different dude anyway.
Right.
But it was sort of, you know, it was sort of disappointing because he's a really smart guy, and you know, to hear him hold forth on the game, I think he has some important things to offer. But like in that regard, let's talk to Ricky 20 years down the line, right? Like, because I mean, that dude, I mean, I saw him play in college, and the way he played the game, like, I mean, you know, he probably suffered thousands of subconcussive hits.
Oh yeah, he has such a violent running style. I mean, as like fast and agile as he was, he, you know, I mean, he dragged people down the field. You know, he got those extra 4 or 5 yards. And...
yeah, absolutely. So
no, I agree with you. Let's see you in like 10 or 20 years. Right. That really is the issue. You know, he was you know, his basic thing was that he didn't have, you know, he was doing fine. Okay, I mean, that's cool, you know, but let's see you know, in the future. Again, I would have much more respect if he said, you know what, I love the game and I wouldn't change anything about it. Whatever happens, happens. You know?
Right.
I have a friend, an Eagles fan, who plays rugby, and his take on this, because we were actually, so there were a bunch of people at my house before we started recording, and I was talking about this with a lot of them. And his rationale is that it should be more like rugby. Like, there's not a lot of padding. You sort of go into it knowing, or with a better conception of how hard you can actually hit someone, and knowing, like, you're going to get injured, you're going to be banged up, like, with a much more realistic assessment or realistic expectation for what it's going to do to your body.
I think
the problem with that is, though, we don't have research, right? On, like, we don't have concussive research on rugby.
Well, rugby players, right? That's absolutely right, right? I mean, you'd be asking football to be essentially a different game. I mean, maybe that's what needs to happen, but, like, you can't. Would it matter if you were running a slant route across the middle? You know what I mean? And you didn't have padding on, and the other guy didn't have padding on? Like, there's. I can't imagine how you make that tackle without.
I mean, on some level, I feel like it, on some level it matters, and on some level it doesn't, because obviously it doesn't matter. Like, you're still going to get hit. But I think that hitting someone wearing all of that padding makes you less conscious of what it actually feels like. That's why you're wearing the padding, so it doesn't hurt you as much, you know? Or so it doesn't hurt the other guy as much. Like, maybe it's supposed to hurt, and then you know not to do it as hard, or I don't know.
Oh, that's, well, I think also the visuals of, I mean, the visuals of a bunch of like incredibly strong, incredibly fast people slamming into each other. I think one of the things the padding does in football is that it kind of obscures just like how violent the game is, you know what I mean? I think if we saw it where everyone was kind of unadorned, I think it would be even harder to justify the sport, you know what I mean? For people, that layer of like kind of denial that you're afforded by the padding, it wouldn't be there, and I think a lot of fans would just be like, yeah, this is Gladiator. I mean, we're watching Gladiators.
Right. I think rugby sort of, and I don't know, because it's clearly not, I mean, as popular in the States as football is, but I mean, rugby hasn't endured sort of the scrutiny that football has, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe, you know, if we applied sort of these, you know, scientific eyes to that game and to their players,
right,
and we, you know, we look at the guys, you know, they're 20, 30 years out, then, you know, maybe we might see some of this, right? Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, no, I think that's the big, I mean, obviously for obvious reasons, because football is so big, it's gotten that level of scrutiny, but I just don't know that, you know, means anything about, you know, other sports and a sport like rugby. I mean, you know, the whole thing, going back to this whole Teddy Roosevelt piece, I don't have a history exactly right with this, but my understanding is they moved away from leather helmets for a reason. I mean, they were like really, really horrible things. And you think about, those guys were smaller too. They weren't even had the size and speed that we got in the game now.
I mean, so yeah. I mean, you think about if somebody like Mario Williams showed up to play, you know, the version of football that they played, you know, back then, they would have shut down the game,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, but yeah. So I, in fact, I haven't seen much rugby. Like, I don't know, you know, really much about it, but like, I mean, I imagine it's probably very close to what like football used to look like, right?
I mean, like, having not seen a football game in the 1920s, I can't say for sure, but that's my understanding as well.
But you're not in rugby, and Nicole, I don't know, you know more about this than I would, at least, or it's not like you're lowering your shoulder, you know, you're not like, you're not Brian Dawkins, like lowering your shoulder, like, and slamming into somebody, right? I mean, you're trying to, you're just like wrapping them up and tackling, right? I mean,
no, but there's a lot more sort of those like football, the offensive and the defensive line going against each other. There's a lot more of that kind of contact, like in the scrums and things like that. You're essentially trying to push the other guy in one direction, and he's trying to push in the other direction. So there's a lot more of that kind of contact.
You know, I
mean, I suspect that there's no way to make football more palatable without making it not be football anymore.
Yeah, you know, that's actually the bottom line. I think at the end of the day, you know, it's going to have to be some sort of overarching reform. I kind of see the future, though, as Joel, you know, sort of outlined it earlier in the conversation, and that is that you just have a much smaller game, you know. And I don't know, like, I actually want to get Robert Smith's book because he apparently talked about this. He actually believes, I mean, he's a guy who's a great football player.
Yeah.
He actually believes football occupies too large of a place, you know, in the American mind. Again, though, I mean, now we're going in circles. That takes us back to, okay, so then what else, right?
Right.
You know, it's not like these guys are going to suddenly start reading the New York Times cover to cover. I mean, you know, I mean, that's just the facts, you know.
It's funny. My friends and I joke after football season is over. We're like, what are we supposed to do on Sunday now?
Oh, my God.
Like, just sit around and look at each other. Like, I don't know what to do anymore.
And look, here's the deal. I'm older than everybody on this call, but, like, I was raised in a time when we didn't have cable, and when football disappeared, oh, my God. That was... Yeah, I mean, it was just a dead sort of emptiness after the football that would just sort of waft over Baltimore. It was like, my God, what am I supposed to do now with my life? That's how you felt.
It's over here. Like, the winter, you got all this winter left over after the
game. Right, it's not nice enough to go outside. You're just sitting at home. Like, now what?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but see, I mean, growing up in the South, like, we were like, okay, well, it's basketball season.
Oh. You
know, basketball season was over. Then it was like, all right, well. You know, what, I guess
that's
we should.
True, but basketball isn't like an all day, like noon until Sunday.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And back then, like, we would have it would start at like 10, you know, NFL films come on at 10, something else come on at 11. Was Sunday, dog.
Like, when there's a basketball game on, you can do other stuff that day. Like, on Sunday, you can't do anything.
That's
1 o'clock.
Well, that's about Saturday and Sunday. So,
like, she always tells the story when we first got hooked up. You know, I said, look, you know, I like you a lot, but here's something you gotta understand. On Sunday, this is what I do. And if you want to do this with me, I will gladly explain to you what I'm doing. We can talk about it.
Did she take you up on that?
And I'll tell you, you know, but this is what I do. And if you can't get with that, I'm sorry, that's a deal breaker, ladies.
Did she take you up on that? Did she watch with you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, she became a huge fan.
Oh, wow.
And I knew she was a huge fan when she started developing, like, favorite players and teams that was totally had nothing to do with me. She would, like, be heartbroken. Like she saw Peyton Manning, basically, in the Colts. That became her team. And when she lost that year to the Steelers, like, it broke her heart, you know. But it was, like, funny because she didn't completely understand the culture. Now I got a buddy, my friend, Brendan Kerner, who's also a huge Colts fan.
Oh, Brendan Kerner, who wrote Now the Hell Will Start.
Yes.
That's
yes,
a fantastic yes, book, just isn't yes, it? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'll tell you, got a shout out here. He's a huge Colts fan. And I said, are you going to call Brendan? I said, baby, I can't call him. You can't talk to him for like a week. That'd be like the fifth thing you say.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you don't want to talk to nobody. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. Again, you know, just as I'm saying here, it is a culture. You know, it's a huge, huge cultural thing. And I think, you know, for me, it plays into this bigger sort of thing of what is happening to a lot of us who are African-American at this point. I mean, it's one of the unfortunate things about how this sort of pathology argument obscures all these much more interesting arguments. You know, the fact that you have this group of people who are moving into the country and are moving in, you know, to different spaces. And some of the things that you carry with you from your neighborhood, things that you liked about your neighborhood, you know, are suddenly, like, obsolete. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just can't, you can't talk that way. You can't do that no more. You know? I don't know. Football is one of those things for me.
And I could actually envision a day when football is less important to me just because I'm older, right? Like, my dad, you know, I mean, he's a guy, like, I mean, he watches football, but like he doesn't watch football like he used to, right? He'll be like, well, "Who's, you know, who does Vince Young play for now?" You know, he just
Do not get me started. Oh,
yeah, he's like doing stuff like that. Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, my bad. Yeah, right. Buffalo, but but yeah, so it's like I could envision that, but you know, like what that is for me was like video games, like I had video games was a huge part of my life, and it's something that I shared with my friends, and like I probably spent like a fifth of my college days playing, you know, like Madden.
Mm.
And like, you know, I remember like one when I started dating, you know, the woman who became my wife, like she came over and I was like watching, like, you know, like on video games, so you can just have the computer play against each other, and I just had this going on my TV, hardcore. Just, you know, just like a game was on. And she comes in, it's like, what the hell is going on in here? And it was just like, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess this is weird. And I never played video games again. Like, it was just weird. Like, I didn't even miss it. So, so maybe that would happen with football. I don't know. But I tend to doubt it. You know, I'm giving up. I gave up soda. You know, I gave up video games. I don't know that I'm ready to go to football. But like, you know, like Nicole said, if like somebody like if I saw like one of my favorite players like just like die, you know what I'm saying? Not even one of my favorite players, but somebody like die on the field, like I don't know how I would feel about that, you know?
Yeah. So
that's the difference between you and Eagles fans, Joel.
You're so first.
Oh man, well I'm one of the few people I can't stand Cowboys fans or Eagles fans. So I grew up in Houston, man. You know, we have a complex about Dallas in Houston. So
that's crazy. You know, that was the first thing I realized as a Cowboys fan, because I lived in near just about every other NFC East city. You know, you're a Cowboys fan. The only team you hate is the Redskins.
Yep.
So right. Realizing that everybody else hates you, was like, man, we ain't even thinking about you. The Texans, what? Did y'all just, where'd y'all come from? Right. Y'all even in the league?
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. And this is what makes people hate you all, hate Cowboys more.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. That's so hardy. I know, right?
Like every time you go play
it's like during the Carolina State games, and all the Carolina people start chanting, not our rival.
Right. Yeah, right.
You gotta like the play the band. It's a big week. It's Cowboys week. And check out what?
Yeah, like I was one of the few people that like back in the day was the Houston Oilers and Texans playing. I guess it was the final preseason game of the year. Maybe it was the third. It would be like the Governor's Cup, and like I actually cared about that. Like that was important.
Wow, a preseason game.
Like, you know, for off third stringers to beat the Cowboys third stringers, because I was like, you know, I didn't want to hear anything from Cowboys fans, you know.
All weekend, yeah. Man, I desperately wanted to beat Washington. We went 1-15 and beat Washington. That was a good season. You know, just to see that look on Joe Gibbs' face. So all that's away. Cool. I mean, it's kind of wild.
It was rough going. Like we couldn't talk. It was just there were like 2 weeks where we just couldn't say anything. They're just like, I had to pretend like you don't exist, you pretend like I don't exist, and we'll never speak of this again.
So thank y'all for sitting down and chatting for probably entirely too long.
thank you.
My pleasure. A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. On behalf of Nicole and Joel and Ta-Nehisi Coates, we will see you in 2 weeks, hopefully.
Yeah. Keep your fingers crossed.
Be easy.